I want to hand out some logic puzzles, and we can try our hand at them. Would you take a stack and hand a stack out? Can I have another volunteer here? Okay. There you go. Now, I don't own any stock in the Dell company, but these puzzles, and you should have two pages, pages 10 and 11, when the students are finished handing them out, are taken from this book called Logic Puzzles, of all things. There's another book called Logic Problems, very similar. And I think it comes out twice a month, or once every other month, I should say. Six times a year. And it will, I think you'll enjoy doing some of these, and it will sharpen your reading and your thinking skills in doing them. If you like crossword puzzles, you may like logic puzzles as well. The one magazine is called Logic Problems, and this is from a particular magazine called Dell Logic Puzzles. If anybody wants to find out how to subscribe, I'll be glad to give you an address that you can subscribe. Actually, Dell publishes, it looks like, a book on math puzzles, too. A magazine on math puzzles. There are plenty of answers in the back, so if you get stumped in the puzzles, you can look up the answers in the back. The puzzles that I'm handing out are the ones found toward the front of the magazine, which are the less difficult of the puzzles. They get very complex and very difficult toward the back of the magazine. Yes, go right ahead, a question. Sure, I don't know if it'll come up. Why don't I read it to you here? We can try it, but I don't think it'll come up. It's called, this isn't the right one. That's not the right one. The magazine is called Dell Logic Puzzles. There's no subscription card in here. The address is, that's the editorial address. Let me find the subscription address here. It's Box 5165. P.O. Box 5165, Harlan, H-A-R-L-A-N, Iowa, 51593, an 800 number. If you want an 800 number, it's 925-1701, 925-1701, that's the 800 number for it. You can see them on newsstands everywhere, and also the other magazine, Logic Problems, which I think originates in England, is also available on the newsstand. Let's look, and I've got it up here on the overhead as well, at the one called Lost and Found. Lost and Found. And I mentioned when we started the class on Monday about sometimes you'd be surprised at how much information is contained in a few sentences. Clark, in his chapter on immediate inference, says the student's probably surprised at how much information we can say about propositions and immediate inference. Who would have guessed it from the simple form of the thing? But as you read this problem, you may be surprised at how much information you can get out of the problem. Four college students, Marcia, Ray, Shika, and Ted, hurried in panic to the campus Lost and Found Center on a rainy Monday late in the term. Each student had just discovered that he or she was missing an important item: backpack, glasses, notebook, or umbrella that had been carelessly left behind a week or so before. Can you discover each student's full name? The last names are Huang, Janos, Jackson, and Lau. The lost item each was hoping to find in the place where the item had been left: computer lab, gymnasium, library, or student union. Now, they have made it easy in one sense, in that each student has one first name and one last name, has lost a different item in a different place. So you don't have to worry about any overlapping. And they've set it up also in a grid form to help you eliminate and make deductions, eliminate some impossibilities and make deductions from the information. Ray first noticed his reading glasses were missing when he sat down to study for a biology exam. Now, if I can find a pen here, I'll go through the overhead with you. Ray first noticed his reading glasses were missing. Well, what can we learn from that? Ray has reading glasses. So let's put a dot at the intersection of reading glasses and Ray. I got that right? Okay, now if we know that, we also know that Ray did not have an umbrella, or did not lose an umbrella. So you can put an X there, also by notebook and by backpack. And you also know that Marcia, Chica, and Ted did not have reading glasses, or did not lose reading glasses, I should say. So you've made a lot of inferences already from that one statement. Yes, in the back? No, that's not necessary. That may seem to be a plausible implication, but it's not a necessary implication. And that's one of the tricks in these things. Sometimes they word them to lure you into making plausible inferences, but not necessary inferences. Well, let's leave this one and go on to the next. Lau's lost umbrella wasn't left in the student union. Well, we know now that Lau has lost an umbrella. So we find Lau here up top, then we go down here to umbrella, down in that last box. And again, we put a dot in there to indicate Lau and umbrella belong together. And again, we can draw the inferences that if Lau lost the umbrella, Jackson, Janos, and Huang did not. And also, if Lau lost their umbrella, Lau did not lose reading glasses, a notebook, or a backpack. Okay, very good. Ray is not Lau. Do you see that? Ray lost his reading glasses, Lau lost an umbrella, so Ray is not Lau. Do you see that? So we'll put an X there where Ray and Lau intersect. Ray is not Lau.
Is it a part of the problem that you can infer from the earlier statement?
Yes.
That in fact, each person lost something?
Yes. Yes, that's what the paragraph up the top indicates. Each person lost something unique in a different place. Each person has a unique first name and last name. Well, I guess it's in the question. Can you discover each student's full name? Then they give the last names, the lost item each was hoping to find, the place where the item had been left. It isn't very clear, but that's the assumption of it. Is that each is unique? Yes.
We can also infer that what it says right here, the CRO is not locking two reading glasses, so we can eliminate that.
Which clue is that? Number two? Okay. Okay, we can look at the intersection of umbrella. And if I'm standing in the way here, I'm sorry. This is difficult to do. And student union, and we can put an X there. Okay. Now the next clue is number three. One of the students left a backpack containing textbooks in the gymnasium. What do we infer there? Actually, it's a statement. We don't have to draw an inference. The backpack was left in the gymnasium. So we find an intersection of backpack and gymnasium. Put a dot in there. And then you can draw the inferences that the backpack wasn't left in the computer lab, the library, or the student union. And the notebook, the reading glasses, and the umbrella were not left in the gymnasium. Anything else? Does anybody see any other inferences that we should draw out of number three? It doesn't mean there's nothing else there. It just means that when we get to the end of the clues, we may have some additional information that will lead us to see something else in number three.
The backpack
contains
textbooks.
Okay. Is that relevant to the problem? Okay. We should keep that in mind, that the backpack contained textbooks. But it may or may not be relevant to the problem. Huang's missing item was left in the library. Where do we put the dot? At the intersection of Huang and library. And then again, rule out the other possibilities as being impossible. And the only reason this grid is here is that most of us aren't intelligent enough to remember all these things in our minds. A genius, I suppose, could remember all this stuff and solve the puzzle without help of a grid. Look at clue five. Janos had misplaced a notebook. What's the inference, or what's the statement here? Janos lost the notebook. So we come down here on Janos, put it at the dot at the intersection of notebook and Janos, and again, rule out the other combinations. Is that legible? Containing data for a research project. One of the things the puzzle writers will do is give you more information than you need sometimes, just to try to throw you off. Clark, if you read in his textbook on the sorites, the chapter on the sorites, he gives you the rules for writing a mystery novel. He says you embed clues, one clue per chapter, write a whole chapter, but throw in a lot of other information just to confuse people. But it's that one clue per chapter that makes the necessary inference as to who committed the murder or who committed the crime. And the whole book becomes a sorites with a lot of noise in it. Okay, let's look at six. Ted's lost object, we aren't told what it is, wasn't left in the computer lab or the student union. So we find Ted, and we rule out computer lab, and we rule out student union. And then finally, Marcia didn't leave anything in the computer lab. So we find Marcia. She left nothing in the computer lab. Okay, does anybody see any inferences? Or have we reached the end of our rope here? And this requires some thinking as to what these sentences mean and what they imply. Yes, sir, with the hat.
And Janos cannot be Ray,
because Ray has played through that and not a notebook. Okay, Janos cannot be Ray. So let's put an intersection. Do you see that? Ray in clue one misplaced reading glasses, and Janos in clue five misplaced a notebook. So Ray cannot be Janos. Marcia's what?
Marcia Lau.
How would you infer that? Any hands? Yes. Go right ahead. On what? Clue two? Yes. Well, Let's think about this, can we? Lyle's lost umbrella wasn't left in the student union. What's that? No, no, it's only one item per person. It's one item per person. Okay, so does everybody see that? Yes, in the back? Okay, the backpack is left in the gymnasium. Ray left his, we aren't told where he left his reading glasses.
Right, he left reading glasses, not a backpack.
Okay. Very good. That eliminates Ray in gymnasium.
And Lyle.
Lyle in the student union. Okay. Lyle's lost the umbrella. And the textbooks were left in the gymnasium, so the umbrella was not left in the gymnasium. Do you see that? The umbrella is not in the gymnasium? We've already eliminated that. I didn't cross out what? Okay. Okay, we've got three eliminated under Lau there. So that would mean that Lau left something in the computer lab. And now we can draw the two inferences here. Now, what was left in the computer lab? Anything from the clues? Lyle left the umbrella. So it was in the computer lab? Okay. So we can put a dot at the intersection of umbrella and computer lab and draw the inferences from that. Now, are there any other vertical or horizontal lines that have three X's in that we can make an inference from? I don't see any. It's hard looking at this light. Oh, right ahead then with the hat on. She cannot be Lau because she didn't leave anything in the computer lab. So we can put an X at the intersection of Lau and Marika and Ted. From which clue? Number six. Ted's lost object wasn't left in the computer lab. So Ted is not Lau. Now this gives us another inference here. That Sheikah is Lau. And make sure when you put the dot down, you cross out all the other possible combinations. That'll help you in drawing some inferences. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have a tissue either. Anybody got a tissue? Now, have I put more back in than I should have? Okay. Where were we now? That we were on Sheikah, her last name is Lau, and it would be helpful when you do these, you probably have to keep on a separate sheet of paper. I can't do it up here. A list of who is whom so that you can see at a glance what information you need to derive yet. What have we got? Her name is Sheikah Lau. Do we know anything else about her? Okay, she lost the umbrella where? In the computer lab. So we've got that one solved. We've got one of the four solved. Now, where are we? Okay. Does that aid us in giving us any more inferences? Ruling out any impossibilities? Okay, if Sheikah lost the umbrella, she did not lose the backpack or the notebook. She lost the umbrella. Now we can eliminate these possibilities. Okay. And we know she lost it in the lab. So we can put that in there and eliminate these possibilities. Now, have we gained any new information about anybody else from making these inferences? I heard a yes. Yes. Where was it? Are there any rows or columns that we can make an inference? Well, I see one there. Under Janos, if it shows up on here, you see Marika has to be Janos. I did what now? No, you don't have that information yet. Oh, okay. You don't have the XX or the dot? Okay. There, is that what you have? Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Yes, go right ahead. Okay, did you all follow that? From clue 5, Janos misplaced a notebook. Is that your next step in your inference? Janos misplaced a notebook from clue 5. And if you look under notebook, okay, had to be the library or the student union. Okay, we go over to Janos and cross out gymnasium. And that gives us the inference that it was lost in the student union. Now let's draw these other inferences here first. Okay, now we have... Why not? Okay. What clue is that? Number 6. Okay.
Also, we know the notebook was left in the student union. So we can go up to the notebook in the student union and cross out.
How do we know the notebook was left in the student union again?
Because it wasn't left anywhere else.
We've failed to draw an inference in that earlier grid there, too. Now that we can draw an inference here that the reading glasses were left in the library. We can draw an inference here that Jackson, I think it is, lost something in the gymnasium. Marika's last name must be Janos. Why? Okay. That's an inference up here, and we can eliminate the other possibilities. Now, does that leave any other inferences there? Marcia lost the notebook, or Marika. How do we know Marika lost the notebook? What clue? Okay. Janos, clue 5. Okay, you put a dot there, eliminate the other possibilities.
And we know that Ted is a Jackson.
How do we know Ted is a Jackson? Marika lost the notebook in the student union. How do you know that it's in the student union? Okay. And Janos lost something in the student union, so Marika lost the notebook in the student union. And eliminate the other combinations. Now, we know so far, I don't know if anybody's been keeping a tally, but we know that Sheikah's last name is Lau. She lost an umbrella in the computer lab. We know that Marika Her last name is Janos. She lost a notebook in the student union. We're still working on the other two, I think. Go ahead. Ted lost a backpack. And which clue now? It's no good if you don't explain your reasoning. Ted lost a backpack, and the backpack is in the gymnasium, okay? Now, where's this? So that we can make that inference as well. Now, that yields another inference here for Ray in the library. Okay. Ray lost the glasses then. No, Marika. Janos is Marika's last name. We've already established that. What's his last name? Wang. How do we know that? How do we know Wang is Ray's last name? Number four. Wang's missing item was left in the library. Ray left his thing in the library, so Ray has to be Wang. What I'm looking for, I'm not looking for speed, I'm looking for the reasoning involved. I want you to see every step in the reasoning. Okay, what are we missing yet? Anything? Ted Jackson. Okay, Ray is not Jackson. He's Wang. And that means Ted has to be Jackson. And he lost the backpack in the gymnasium. Ray lost the reading glasses in the library. His last name is Wang. Can you read what I have up there? Ted and Wang, that's right. That should have been crossed off too. I had it crossed off earlier. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I can't hear him. Ted Jackson lost the backpack in the gymnasium. So we've solved the puzzle. We've gotten all the information we were required to get from this puzzle. And what you've done in a simplified form is drawn inferences from all these clues after eliminating other combinations that are impossible. Now, the more difficult problems in these books, sometimes you have to work them out. You have to make different assumptions. It's very important, the procedure. You have to make different assumptions to see how they work out. It's very much like doing philosophy or doing formal logic. You start with an assumption. You see what the implications are of that assumption. And if it comes out to something impossible, you know the assumption's wrong. So then you have to start again with another assumption. It's not quite as easy as this, in which we started and worked our way all the way through with very few hitches. Sometimes you have to start, work to an impossibility, start all over again with these. Now I've given you, I think each of you should have two sheets, and I won't take any more time with the puzzle, but I think you should have some fun with these other two, or these other three. Each of them is a little bit more difficult than the one before it, and it will require you to think about what the sentences mean and exactly what is implied by each of the sentences. And then you can rule out the impossibilities, the impossible combinations, and solve the puzzles. And it's amazing, you might not think when you started the puzzle that it was possible to come up with the answers given the clues given. But it is possible, and you did very well in solving the first one. So if you're interested in the subject, go ahead and subscribe to the magazine, and you'll get 45 puzzles every other month to keep you busy. Some of them will take hours. Yes, sir. See, why not? The only My only caution would be that you, when you put the sentences down, you understand exactly what the sentences mean. Someone has suggested at some point, why don't we have a computer write a systematic theology? Let's just, operates on formal logical principles. Why don't we have a computer do it? Well, the difficulty would be in programming it. That is, you would have to first program the computer in categorical form for other propositions of Scripture. And it's that translation of the English sentences or the Hebrew or the Greek sentences into categorical form that would be probably the most difficult thing about it. And then turn the computer loose to see what can be deduced from all those propositions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to make sure that the terms are used univocally. Clark brings that out in his discussion of what James has to say about faith and justification and what Paul has to say about faith and justification. Are they using the terms in a univocal sense, or are the senses of the terms different? And you just couldn't type into the computer the word, if they're different, the same word, and expect the computer to distinguish between them. That's, in many cases, the crux of the difficulty is determining exactly how to translate those words into categorical form without any equivocation. Now, in closing, I've got a few minutes, and I want to mention something that one of the students asked me about. And I want to caution you about this. Remember when we started the course, I gave you a simple illustration of two job offers. And I did that for a purpose. And the purpose was to show how easy it is to go astray. If you're going to jump to a conclusion, make a hasty judgment, rely on your gut instinct, whatever you call it, it's very easy to go astray. And one thing I hope you've learned from the course is that while logic is a very powerful tool for understanding any document or any person or any argument, it's not a tool that's to be used with arrogance. That illustration of the job offer should have made it clear to you that your snap judgments are apt to be wrong. Your common sense, uninformed, not thought out judgments are apt to be wrong, and you should stop, slow down, think less highly of yourself than we're apt to think. Consider all the possibilities in the argument. We had the great case the other night of the verse from Scripture, a wise son makes a glad father. Probably if I had thought about that verse for 100 years, it wouldn't have occurred to me that someone might read it, a wise son becomes a glad father. But we had one person in the class here who said, maybe someone will read it that way. Well, it's an incorrect reading, but sometimes we make snap judgments. We think we're making the correct reading when we're wrong. Have the humility to sit down and think about the problem. Don't just assume that whatever comes to your mind first is the correct answer. Don't just assume that someone else is wrong, or right for that matter. Think about it. And before you open your mouth to speak, if you're going to discuss something with someone, if you're going to disagree with them, before you open your mouth, think twice. The carpenters have a rule when they're building a house: measure twice, cut once. Well, perhaps some rule would be applicable in debate or in discussion. Think twice, speak once. And think through these things in your mind. Don't just think that you have the innate ability to see through everything automatically. Arguments can be very deceptive. And you need to sit down, have the humility, give it some thought, and actually try to figure out what's being said. Make sure you've understood the speaker before you respond. Make sure you understand everything he means, and then disagree after you've given it some thought. But don't jump to conclusions, please. That's one of the things I hope you'll carry out of this class. Is my time up?